This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
They cut it back for Neves. It's one for the training ground. It's a brilliant goal and they didn't spot it. No chance for keeper Nyland.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of MyOldManSaid.com and your host for the show, which is, it's episode 91, Deja Vu. Because we recorded 91 before. It was our first time in the studio and a few technical issues. So we put that one out to patrons. It'll probably end up being better than this show. But joining me to make sure that doesn't happen, Mr. Chris Bird, welcome.
Hello.
And first time newbie, Ben Redding.
Thanks for having me over.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
This is more of an experimentation to make sure we know how to use this four-way studio. I say four-way, there's three of us, but we have got a guest on. Mr. Dan Rogers has gone AWOL, so we've tracked down the most likely person who knows where he is. We'll make that call after I tell you what's coming up in the show. Very topical at the moment, obviously. Jose Mourinho has come back into the Premier League with Spurs. Pochettino goes, and within 24 hours, Mourinho is in place. It was probably less than 24 hours, wasn't it?
Probably less than 12, wasn't it?
I was going to say 12 hours, I think, pretty much.
Yeah, so obviously that was all sorted out before old Poch was pushed, but we'll discuss that in the 3 points. Also, the fan manifesto, it's election season, and no, we're not going to talk about Brexit, but we'll just quickly run through the Football Supporters Association's fan manifesto. Also, some kind of crazy 27-0 victory that cost the victor his job, did it not?
Absolutely backwards.
We'll discuss what's happening at Villa, how we kind of see it after 12 games, and obviously the Christmas festive period ahead. We'll look at the Liverpool game in terms of the pricing on that ticket. I went to a Aston Villa fan consultation group meeting last week, so probably discuss the hot takes from that. And we will rerun the Scott Hogan, first ever three-way Scott Hogan. I know Ben's really disappointed because he wanted to.
Gutted. That was the only reason I was coming, so I might be going now.
We'll try to get Ben on to do a Scott Hogan for real, because you've got to have a crack at the champion, which is Dan Rogers.
I need to take him down. He's had his time.
Ooh. Oh, hello. Fight and talk.
Never met him.
I like the cut of his jib.
I do as well. Feisty. But we will rerun the first attempt at episode 91, the three-way Scott Hogan between Max Stokes, Chris Bird and Dan Rogers, because I think the audio is all right on that. I think it's listenable. I will also probably briefly mention the Newcastle game as well, but we'll go more into Newcastle in the Mom's Patron bonus show, the anti-preview. And this show is, as the last couple of episodes have been, brought to you by our sponsor, Beer 52. Just listen to the end of the show to see how you can get a free case of craft beer by joining their club for just paying the price of postage, which is $4.95, and you get the very next day a box of 10 beers. You can actually listen to episode 90, where we actually sample some of their beers on air to get a better gist of the deal that they're offering, which is kind of a no-brainer when you consider the quality of the product. But if you don't want to go back to episode 90 or you've listened to it already, just hang on in to the end of the show. Thank you. Right, let's get into the 3 points. First point, number one, is it's general election time, and I don't know if they use policy now to actually attract votes, because it's more about digital social media sabotage. I don't know if anybody here has watched the Netflix documentary The Great Hack about Cambridge Analytica, which you see that and you just go, oh, we're so fucked. How all these elections have basically been influenced via Facebook. But anyway, some people might still be interested in policies. So what the Football Supporters Association has done is set out a fan manifesto to basically try to influence the political parties into looking into making promises to sustain the various things, which includes sharing the wealth to the grassroots, you know, basically making sure the wealth of the Premier League filters down the pyramid and supports the base of the game. Also standing, where, I mean, this has been an ongoing battle, but we're finally getting to, you know, see the actual end of this. Hopefully the government ordered a review, so hopefully within a year we should have some proper movement on that. Transport as well, there is a campaign which is actually supported by the Premier League and EFL to have flexible football rail tickets, so instead of buying a ticket for a date, you're buying it for a fixture. So if Sky move it, you've still got that ticket and you've paid for it, so it will work on whatever day that fixture is played, which I think is a good idea. Also, the FSA have set out a very, very robust and solid governance and regulation guidelines, which the FA have basically given the thumbs up, as have various MPs as well. And I think this is something that actually could come into play and form the foundations and bedrock of future fit and proper tests, which obviously Villa were no thing or two with our Chinese friend. And also the final thing is equality, making sure that the Football Offences Act is extended beyond just racialist and indecent chanting and includes protected characteristics from the Equality Act. Anyway, moving on to something a bit more juicier in terms of football.
I do it with a bit of sadness, but I have to do it. I have to speak about Mauricio. I have to congratulate him for the work he did, and I have to share with you what we already share indoors, which is this club will be always his home. This training ground will be always his training ground. He can come when he wants. When he miss the players, when he miss the people that he work with, the door is always open for him. And from my experience, tomorrow is another day, and you will find happiness again.
Mourinho to Spurs. First of all, Chris, Pochettino going, what did you think of that?
Poor decision for me. But you look at their results, and they haven't been great in this calendar year.
Yeah, I think they're averaging just over 1 point in the last 25 games, and they haven't actually won away, which is even worse than Villa.
No, the Champions League run kind of masked it a little bit, didn't it? Where they kind of stumbled through to a certain extent and were very lucky in how they got to the final, and that kind of masked their league form to a certain extent.
But I mean, if you look back to 82 when Villa were going for the European Cup, it's hard to concentrate on the league. Because obviously the focus is, it's almost like tunnel vision. So, but Spurs managed to qualify again, so it's kind of job done in that respect. What did you think, Ben?
Personally, I think they've probably panicked and thought that we've got this big, shiny new stadium, and if you have a look at the league table now, you can see that the top four are already quite a big chunk away. So I think that's clearly part of the conversation that they've had there. I think if it was most other teams, if Spurs weren't in that ground, I think he'd probably still be manager because all the fans liked him. They liked this style of play. And I think they might well struggle to like Mr. Mourinho if he continues the tactics he's deployed at past clubs.
Yeah. It seems like, to me, just with the timings, because if they really wanted to get rid of Podge, they would have done it at the start of the international break. It seems like they were in negotiations with Mourinho for a good week or so, and the lawyers were all in, you know, bashing out his contract, etc., and that's what the holdup was. So it's almost like constructive dismissal, isn't it?
Yeah,
they'll have known. It was kind of on the radar, wasn't it, even at the start of the season, that Pochettino might not even make the first game of the season here. It had been talked about for a while, and I wonder if he's just pushed Levy so far in board meetings and his general demeanour in the press, if you see, press conferences, etc. And I just wonder if Levy's gone, do you know what, I'm just going to sort of cut the head off this and give us time to turn the ship around, which I think an 11-point gap at the moment from fourth. I mean, they're going to do well to overhaul that.
I do wonder as well if maybe it's a ploy where they're thinking, I know they've got players like Eriksen who are coming up for the end of their contract, if it is maybe a bit of a desperate last-ditch attempt to say, look, we've got this big-name manager, we've been there and done it before, get them to sign a contract before in January, they can effectively get a Bosman sorted, can't they? So
Just a hypothetical question, just to round this point off. I'll start with you, Ben. Let's pretend that Pochettino was Dean Smith, and Dean Smith has taken us to the Champions League final, and
that'd be wonderful.
And all the other achievements he made, obviously just getting us in the Champions League was a good start. And then this happens, but Mourinho comes in. And so obviously Mourinho's got, you know, decent track record in terms of winning, but his the style is a bit sturgid. How are you feeling at this moment?
I think that's the question. It's how much do you value winning a trophy? Because Spurs haven't won one for ages. So I think that'll be the question, whether they'll take a bit of turgid football for 2 years, if it means they can win a couple of cups and maybe sneak in the Champions League or Europa League this season. But yeah, I think if I was a Spurs fan, I'd be pretty worried. There's a great quote I found earlier from Mourinho where he said, "The quality in both the squad and the academy excites me." I'm surprised he knows what an academy is based on his past experience, because he's just going to be going for older players. So if I was a Spurs fan, I'd be disappointed. And I think, bearing in mind where we are in the season, I think if they were still struggling after Christmas, fans might be a little bit more in tune with the change. But for me, it's maybe a month or two early.
Chris, in terms of Mourinho, there's this perception that he failed at Manchester United. But when you actually look at it, I mean, maybe in it's all relative, but he actually won a UEFA Cup there. He won a League Cup, won the FA Cup as well. So same question. Are you content with Mourinho? Because from a Spurs point of view, you know, they're the perennial bottlers. And, you know, it's almost like an old adage in football. In recent times, they don't really get it across the line. So how are you feeling waking up with Mourinho as your manager now?
I think if you take the emotion of Pochettino out of the equation, now they'll say, well, he's had a 5-year and what an amazing run and all he's achieved at the club. But you look back, and in football terms, it's like nobody remembers the year you won, you know, you became third in the league, or it's like saying, oh, we're the team who just about stayed up. It's like no one cares.
Yeah.
Now your legacy as a club comes from winning things, not just getting into the Champions League. And if you've won the league and you say, well, we're the league champions, we are, you know, or remember that year we lost a European Cup final, they'll remember that, but not for the good reasons. But I think ultimately they have to win something to sort of validate the project that Levy's put in place over a reasonably long period of time. You know, Pochettino built a great side and they've got some really good players. But I sort of thought at the beginning of the season, and we discussed on the show, that while some of the other big teams were already in transition, everybody looked at it that Spurs were about to be. Well, now they are. And I think had Poch taken that team as far as he was going to, you know, if you look at the side, you think, well, if he can't win a trophy with this, are they going to have to tear this up and start again? And I just wonder if they're bringing Mourinho in thinking, well, maybe he might be the personality who can knock a Dele Alli into shape, or can he get the best out of some of the players they've got?
Because I don't think he would have taken the job unless he saw, because you know what he's like. I mean, we always used to say in the early days, Mourinho wouldn't take the Villa job because there's too much work to be done. So he must have seen, here's an opportunity, just need to add a few bits, change the mentality, job to Gooden.
Brilliant squad, haven't they? You look at their players. they should be nowhere near where they are in the league at the moment. They're 14th or something. Yep. So I can see that he's definitely got something to work with. I just thought, on like the WhatsApp groups, I was like, I'd be amazed if he went there because they won't spend the money. Tottenham, we saw it with when they were after Grealish when they tried to get him on the cheap. If they were trying to do it then, you know, they've got this big stadium now. I can't see how all of a sudden they're just going to completely change tact and go with what Mourinho's gone with in the past, but we'll see, won't we?
Right, well, obviously this isn't the Spurs podcast, so let's move on to the third point, Chris Budd. Actually, I spotted this one as well earlier on in the week. The bizarreness of being too good for your job. Is that a nutshell description of it?
Essentially, so an Italian under-18 squad by the name of Invicta Soro, I hope I haven't pronounced that wrong, who are managed by a chap called Massimiliano Ricci.
That's a good name.
Which is a fantastic manager's name. And Mr. Ricci,
Lionel,
was sacked after his side dismantled a side called Marina Calcio 27-0. His chairman deemed it that this destroying of a team was highly disrespectful to a team that had suffered several key injuries, and said, "We were stunned and deeply regretful when hearing that our juniors team had beaten Marina Calcio 27-0. The values of youth team football are anti-ethical to such a thing. The opponent must always be respected, and that did not happen today." So the president decided to sack him.
Yeah, it reminds me that I think it was the Corinthian casuals who, in terms of etiquette of the game and it being fair, would purposely miss penalties if they got one just because they deemed it unfair on the opposition.
I mean, surely if you're playing the morals thing, if it gets to sort of double figures, why wouldn't the opposition just go, "Bollocks to this, we'll just walk off"?
Yeah.
Forfeiting is probably better than losing 27-0.
Right, before we go on to discuss what is happening to Aston Villa as we enter winter, normally it's the bleak midwinter, is it not?
It's usually a lean Christmas, yes.
Yeah, as we sit there in front of the fire, roasting marshmallows, waiting for the daffodils to pop up.
Or indeed the hot dogs.
And the Villa dogs. No, we don't call them hot dogs on this show. It's Villa dogs. Before we go on, thank you very much to the My Old Man Said patrons for keeping the show alive and keeping it real. The latest people to join our band of merry people are Tim Dixon, Matthew Smith, Philip Sale, Phil Rose, somebody just called Neil. It's like Prince, where you just...
Or Wesley.
Or Wesley, yeah.
In between us, Neil.
In between us, Neil. And James. Those three eyes on that. My eye doesn't work on my keyboard, so... Tozzeri?
Yeah, I reckon you
And I've ridden it with about three or four eyes because my...
Tozzeri.
My eye gets stuck. But thank you very much for joining up as My Old Man Said patrons. Please do, if you want to support the show as we go into the year 2020, and we are looking now at procuring this magnificent machine in front of me that allows me to make calls and get people on the show down the line, so to speak, so we can operate more as a radio show, as we'll prove to you in a second. But also you get access to the anti-preview show, and there's also rewards as well if you come in at a certain tier. But please do give it some thought and go to myomansaid.com and click on the Patreon link and join us. Right, for those of you who are wondering where Dan Rogers is, well, that's what we've been wondering. Apparently he went off to Norway, and if anybody follows him on Twitter, that was the last we've heard of him. There was some kind of pyro videos or something.
Yeah, apparently it was fireworks.
Fireworks. Was it some kind of protest?
Mm.
I've got a sneaking suspicion where Mr. Rogers is, so let's just give him somebody a phone call here. Just put this number in here. Just let this ring. You can join in with the phone calls.
Okay.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Is that Chris?
Yes. Hello.
Chris in Norway?
Yes.
Can you tell us... Can you tell us where Mr. Dan Rogers is? I think you're the last one to actually see his whereabouts.
Yeah, he's still wandering the streets of Norway, tasting the local poison, the aquavit. So
this is...
I can't get him home to you, no.
He's run out of money, he spent it all on that dark poison that you guys call a drink.
Yeah, yeah. loving it here, so I don't think you're getting him back home.
Dan's quite pasty, isn't he? So he's not used to like sunlight. So this is perfect for him. Norway in winter.
I might see if I can get his. I'll ring up the club and see if I can get his season ticket transferred to offer up as a prize to a listener to the show, because it would be a shame to see it go out of use. Listeners, if you don't know the dulcet tones down the line, it's Chris. Is it Christopher? I never know how to say your name. Is it Christopher?
Or do you? Yeah, I think you say Christopher more correct than you say Ørjan Nyland. You never get that right.
Well, so we get in trouble for not saying Connor Hourihan or Hourihan.
Or Hourihan.
Hourihan. And we also get into trouble in the Scandinavian Viking world as well for our... Is it Nyland? 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 Well, the thing was, Chris...
Nyland.
The thing was, Chris, because he was the third string goalkeeper, we never thought we'd mention his name again. And now suddenly he's Villa's number one again.
Yeah.
Now, I read out your story, but it was on the patron-only podcast, the one where we were having sound issues. What's the Hertha Berlin goalkeeper called? Who's the Norwegian number one?
Oh, Jesus. What's his name again?
Correct.
To be totally honest, I'm more into Aston Villa than my national team. But yeah, his name is Rune Jarstein, and he finds himself.
Was it like 2015? He was basically told he was surplus to requirements by Hertha, and then he was told to find another club. And then a couple of injuries later, he's suddenly number one and suddenly wins. Is it goalkeeper of the year, wasn't it, in the Bundesliga?
Is it Rune Jarstein or Jarstein?
Rune Jarstein.
That's the one.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Yeah. And actually, he was best. The goalkeeper in Bundesliga for 2 years running after that. And then he was, at that time, he was 31. Ørjan Nyland is now 29. So I think in 2 years' time, Ørjan is going to be best Premier League goalkeeper.
He's going to leave the Villa and go to the Bundesliga.
Like, that's what you're saying. I think you're getting a bit excited there, Chris. I'm going to ask you, man to man, do you think that however you say his name properly, Nyland
or Jan
will be at Villa next season?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, confident.
But obviously, there's a lot of competition. You know, great goalkeepers at Villa.
But Jed Steer always gets. He always gets injured though, so I think that opens up a potential. But I want to know what happened to Kalinic. He's just disappeared, and he was originally bought by Dean Smith because Nyland was shit.
Yeah, but you know, God knows what happened. Golini or something, playing for Italy now. And
I'm releasing rap records on YouTube as well.
Yeah.
When are you next over in England to see the mighty Villa?
Actually, I'm coming next week after the Newcastle game. I'm flying into Manchester on the Saturday. So I'm going Man United away with the missus.
Is it your first? It's your first game this season, is it, in the Premier League?
Yeah, and I went also pre-season in Leipzig. Max, actually.
Yeah. Ah, yes, he said. From what he can remember.
Not Premier League, but I tell you what, those pre-season games, it's the best game of the season.
Yeah?
And right.
Well, normally I go to watch Villa against Telford and Warsaw, so I can't really say I agree with you there. Ben, did you see any pre-season games before this season?
I've actually been to Telford too, so it's not a bad little ground, that one. But
actually,
it's all right for non-league, and they've got Domino's by the away end bonus.
But it wasn't the best game of the season.
No,
I think there was maybe one better last season that might just top the bill over Telford.
So flying in, how are you feeling about Aston Villa so far this season with 12 games gone as an overseas fan coming in to see the first game? I mean, obviously it's Manchester United and Manchester United are kind of hot and cold at the moment, but are you concerned at all with Dean Smith's Aston Villa?
I'm not concerned at all. I think we'll be fine. We just need to pick up points, and Premier League is very competitive.
Do you think it's just a matter of adding a few, like a striker and a winger, for example, to what's already there?
Yeah, I think with the team we got now, we can beat pretty much everyone. Just don't do stupid mistakes. And I think we need 3 points on Monday at Villa Park against Newcastle, obviously. And I think we can get the result at Old Trafford as well.
Yeah.
So I think going to Manchester with the Norwegian manager there, I wanted to go to the Solskjaer second party, but he's doing quite well at the time as well. So I think I don't know who they're playing this weekend, but if he loses them and loses to Aston Villa, then he'll still be fine, I think. So there will be no second party.
Yeah, I think because they won. Did they win the last game? Did they beat Chelsea? Did they beat
and United.
Yeah,
Chelsea, didn't they? They won the last game.
Yeah, I think that kept the heat off Ollie. I think winning that game.
Man United and Chelsea was the first game of the season, I think.
I know Man United beat him because Rashford scored that free kick. Didn't
that was in the cup.
That was in the cup.
Yeah, they've got Sheffield United. Then they go away to Astana on Thursday in the Europa League.
Yeah. Big game.
Right, anyway, so in terms of the return of Dan Rogers, is there any ransom you're putting up? Are you asking for money or is it dead or alive? I don't know. I mean, I'm not putting up a ransom. I don't care if he comes back or not.
Or just a booking history or...
Do you need tickets for any game? Maybe we can have a work... Well, we'll just use his season ticket.
Maybe Villa Dogs. Every time I'm over.
We can organise that.
Yeah, we can organise some Villa Dogs for his safe return.
I think there is something worse than a Villa dog now at Villa Park. Have you had the tandoori? I think it's only in the Trinity.
There's one in the Upper Holt, actually, I think.
The tandoori roll, I thought this is going to be amazing. It was a chicken breast, crushed poppadom, mango chutney in a bun. £6.20, worst thing I've ever had at a football ground. I had two bites and put it in the bin. It was rank.
Lacking in spices, was it?
It was just horrible. It had the chicken had like really greasy... Not crunchy. It was just poor, really poor.
Well, I'm surprised we let you on this show because only people who eat Villa Dogs are
I'll see you later.
You'll probably get out of here for your own safety. Yeah, yeah.
Well, we are near the Blues ground, so...
Don't tell anybody our location. Right, Chris, thank you very much for joining us and, actually joining us in an experiment because we're testing out various equipment and since Dan Rogers has gone AWOL...
Yeah. Tell your story about Dan.
Yeah, please do. Because, here we go. Come on.
It's not a story, but I think he was a little skeptical that we Norwegian Aston Villa fans could be real Villa fans like you.
Yeah, but, I'm not skeptical.
He didn't just meet me; met Andreas, and I.
Did you say? Well, did you say Norwegian?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, very skeptical.
You guys took a hell of a beating.
so what? So tell us more. So he was skeptical. Did he admit that, or was that just the aura that he gave off?
Yeah, and I think most of the people I meet in Birmingham as well are quite skeptical, like a foreign fan, or what are you? Are you a real fan? But I think he wrote a piece actually on his website, villaunderground.com.
Yeah.
Just go in there, have a read, and it's a well-written story. And
yeah, but there's too many ads on it. Just made me feel made me feel dizzy. I'm going to put my ad blocker on, and then I'm going to read it.
Yeah, but it's actually a good story, and then you understand my feelings as well. He describes it really well.
All right,
but anyway, I hope to see you. Some of you up in Manchester Sunday?
I'll probably have to enter the bloody ticket ballot to get a chance. I mean, back in the day, I could always get a couple of tickets. Just normally, it's a different world nowadays trying to get tickets.
Yeah, I won a raffle, like a Lions Club raffle. So yes, lucky me.
Well, we'll have to get you on to discuss that. I think Max Stokes will be at that game as well, so you'll probably see his mug about.
Or camera.
But.
Hope I don't get his camera off my face.
But thank you very much for joining us, and you will no doubt join us again in the future. Thank you very much. That's Chris.
Cheers.
Chris from Thanks, Norway. Guys. Thank you for joining us. Cheers.
Bye.
Right then. Thank you very much to Chris for taking time out of it. I think he's in Copenhagen, a Copenhagen hotel, to speak to us, where it's obviously very getting cold up there in the world of Scandinavia, and Villa hopefully won't be freezing in terms of where we are in the league. It's not looking too good at the moment when you look at the table, and we are sitting in that spot that a lot of Villa fans said at the start of the season, as long as we finish 17th, who gives a shit? Well, we haven't got much wiggle room now because that's where we are. We discussed this on the first version of 91, but we'll discuss it before we go on to what's happening on the pitch. Keith Wynas, we didn't actually mention this, finally settled out of court with the club. The club, said, he's all right, see you later, paid him off. I know that a lot of people were throwing Keith Wynas under the bus. I mean, I obviously met him several times through the fan consultation group, which he always attended, pretty much every one. And he's an affable chap. And I think there was a little bit of scapegoating there because he just thought there would be money there. And then suddenly the drawbridge was pulled up and then it was like, emergency, what do we do? How do we get out of this mess? Because I think he said to somebody around January of that season, if we don't go up, the shit's really going to hit the fan. And, this is the season, obviously, with Fulham, when Fulham beat us in the final, and obviously the shit did hit the fan. So anyway, that's that done and dusted, and we can obviously move on now, and that whole episode is in the past.
At least we got a good gif out of Keith Wynas while he was around, didn't we, when we signed Grabban.
It's probably his main contribution, actually, that gif.
That's his lasting legacy.
It is, exactly.
Thanks, Keith.
I mean, speaking of supporter consultation groups, I just remembered I went to one, and I think there's a few things worth mentioning. Ben, you've emailed me a few times with issues. Is there anything that...
I think the thing for me is...
stood out?
As a dad... with the kit is the big thing. Obviously, Christmas coming up, the availability of kits, especially for kids, is absolutely terrible in the shop. It just seems to have been the case for years as well.
Yeah, this is what we said, actually, to the staff that were there, was like, this isn't just a Kappa thing. It seems to be a perpetual thing. And so they're going to set up a meeting with the fan consultation group and Kappa and Fanatics to see how we can improve things going forward. I mean, obviously, the kit for next season is already designed, and they have to design them a year in advance, basically, because all of these kits get made in China. And so they have to get the production rolling, and obviously other clubs are doing it as well. So it's all about getting a slot.
Yeah, I think the comments like on the kit from a sizing perspective, for me, I think that's just generally how things are now. You know, things, to me, it seems that it's a clear marketing tactic to get you to buy the adult shirt quicker. So in effect, they make like a shirt a size smaller.
Oh, good conspiracy theory. I like this.
Well, my son's 8 and I have to buy him a 10-year-old kit, and he's not, I'd say he's fairly average for his age.
Yeah.
So I just think that's how it is for me. I've got a home shirt. I've got other friends who've got all the kits. The quality is fine from what I've had, but I can see for like overseas fans that, you know, if you're wanting to buy a shirt the returning, et cetera, is, you know, it's not ideal.
I think that Elite Fit one was, that's just clever marketing, because you have, it's like the whole philosophy behind luxury brands. It's like that FOMO. It's like you need, if you're like a, you know, the hipster or whatever, you want to have the best one, and you're prepared to pay that amount as a status symbol. And to put a price on something because it's tighter fit is actually less material, but you have to pay £25 more. If you can get away with it, it's obviously genius, because there's always people that will fall for that.
No, I mean, from my point of view, I definitely cannot carry an Elite Fit shirt.
They don't know that. These listeners don't know that. It's audio. We they have no proof. Yeah.
There's no proof of our faces for radio.
Yeah. I'm so hench, I can't fit into an Elite one. But yeah, I'm from my point of view, I've just got a normal sort of fan fit shirt, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
I haven't had any issues with it. My lad loves his kits and he lives in them, but... Yeah, I mean, from my point of view, I think the kits look really good this season. I've got no issue with how they look. It's just availability. I mean, from my point of view, the kids are the ones that are going to be buying full kits. You're not going to be having adults wandering around in them. So they should have, well, John Terry might, I suppose. But it's something they need to sort.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of what the burning issues are. I mean, there's going to be new screens put in. I think the first one...
They were putting that up last week.
That's ready for the Newcastle game. Then both of them will be ready for the Leicester game. I think they're being re-angled as well, and they'll be bigger, so it'll be interesting to see.
A lot of the talk was really about seating, wasn't it, in terms of the seating exchange?
Yeah. I was going to say, my friends had first-hand experience of how long it takes to get your money back from Villa on that. It's certainly not a slick system that they're using at the moment.
Oh, sorry, the
Yeah, the seat exchange.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I was basically me questioning the club over that and this whole idea that you get 80% of the value. And obviously, if it's a Category A game and they're reselling it for 45 quid, 50 quid, or if it's a kids ticket and they're upgrading it. But it's, you know, it's one of those arguments where they're saying, well, are you trying to profiteer out of a season ticket? And you're thinking, well, if you buy a season ticket, it technically is yours. And then there's, you know, the situation where they're, you know, I propose, well, what about categorizing the actual value of what the money you get back? And they poo-pooed that idea. But it is what it is. You buy the season ticket and those are the terms.
I think really. They know as well that in the current climate of Villa tickets, especially for the bigger games, if you have a season ticket and can't go, you probably won't need to put it on resale. You know full well you'll be able to get face value from someone know.
Well, that's what I told him. I said it's opening up the situation where rather than use the system, especially for those games, people will sell it privately just because they want face value back.
I've never used it. How does that work then? So if I can't go to the Newcastle game, I put it on this portal or whatever it is. So do you have to be like a Claret member to buy that, or does it just go to like general sale? Or
is it at the level that it is?
I'm not quite sure.
So when the game's sold out, it's...
Right, okay. Or, for example, if the game sells out and then you decide 2 days before the game you can't go.
If it sells out at Claret member level, then I think it's open to Claret members. This is however clubs run.
And then essentially, your season ticket costs £500, for example. That gets split 19 ways.
Yeah.
And then obviously you get 80% of 1/19th of that price rather than category price in your seat.
And you buy that through the normal Villa ticket office online or whatever.
I believe it opens it up to the seat just gets sort of taken off your card, as it were.
So in effect, if you bought one, you would never know if it was a season ticket return or if it was just a spare
season. It just reappears on the map, doesn't it, the seating map. And we also talked about the fact that there must have been, 5,000 plus empty seats at the Wolves game. And there was people who obviously wanted to go, but anybody who was a season ticket holder got a free ticket, obviously, and 5,000 or so elected not to turn up on the night, which is something they will, it's something that when they think about it next season and they think, oh, should we give away free tickets again to our loyal season ticket holders? They'll go, well, 5,000 didn't turn up, so no.
Yeah, it was a strange one, that, wasn't it? Because it was midweek in half term.
It was against Wolves, so, you know, come on.
And it sold out really quickly, didn't it? It didn't even go down to season ticket holders being able to buy additional seats. So there was clearly demand there, and it was half term. They would have sold all the tickets for that, I would have thought.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, we'll probably come on to it later, the very fact that it sold out really quick was because the ticket prices were sensible.
Yeah,
absolutely. The opposition was decent, and I think in hindsight, what they probably should have done is said, if you want to go as a season ticket holder, you need to go on the website and effectively register to go to the game. And then any of the people that didn't would then have their seat go up.
While we're here, let's talk about the Liverpool pricing, because I know you both have strong opinions about that. So.
Yes. Yeah.
The club asked us, so what do you think about prices for the Liverpool game? And I think the pitch up was about £20. And I think you think, fair enough, quarter final Liverpool, £20. And then you don't really think of much beyond that. And they're saying we're looking at like 2025 as being the lowest. They didn't really start mentioning figures of 33 or whatever. Disappointingly, the Aston Villa Supporters Trust representative there said, charge them as much as you can. And you think, well, hang on a minute.
No.
Potentially playing a third string Liverpool team. Their ticket prices are £20 because I don't think you're allowed to charge the away fans more than the lowest price of the home tickets.
Yeah, and I believe Liverpool had done an agreement with Villa to say essentially, you know, some of our most loyal away support will be probably making the effort to go over to Qatar for the, whatever it is, World Club Championship. So they will be opening up the opportunity to Liverpool fans who don't necessarily always get to go away to go to that game, but they are acknowledging that, well, we know that we're not going to play a full strength side, so our ticket price will
represent that.
So the fact that you've got away supporters being charged £20 and Villa fans in home areas, especially in your Category A tickets, they're 33 quid with no concessions, which is shocking. So that was one of my gripes. In terms of the availability of the so-called tickets available from £20. You're actually only talking about potentially three or four blocks in the stadium. You're talking about the whole end wings, which aren't very big, two blocks in the north stand, and that's it.
It's the old trick, like where you can say tickets from £20.
And you're talking about maybe 1,000 seats or 2,000 seats.
They've disappeared straight away. I mean, obviously factor in the games on TV as well.
Yeah. And the big one for me was the common sense of having three home games in a 9-day period that close to Christmas. You know, we've got Liverpool on the 17th, Southampton on the 21st, Norwich on Boxing Day. They'll all, I would imagine, be bumper crowds anyway. The Liverpool game comes as something as a bit of a bonus. I mean, what would they have done if we were away from home?
Yeah.
I think we've just really got it wrong on this one. It's too expensive. There's too many variables as well. Like we've said, we're not going to play our full team. Liverpool certainly aren't going to play their full team. So when you think, like you've mentioned, there's Premier League games coming up within a very short space of time. Most of the seats are between 25 and 30 quid. You're rather going to pay to go to a Premier League game than seeing, we don't even know if it'll be a third strength Liverpool team. So no, I think we've really got it wrong.
And I think Dean Smith will put out a similar team than he did against Wolves as well. I don't think you'll be seeing us putting out a full-strength team to go for the kill.
I think we'll put the heavy hitters on the bench. I think you'll probably see a stronger squad. And if we need to get the job done, we know we'll have the weapons to do that. But I'm pretty sure that he'll see it as, you know, we're going into a very busy period of games, of which the games that follow that Liverpool game on paper to me are the really imperative section of the season. When you look at the games over Christmas, they will define whether we stay up or not, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
You're looking at Southampton, you're looking at Norwich, that's 2 6-pointers at home.
Yeah.
Especially the games that we'll come on to shortly in terms of what we, you know, we're coming off the back of trips to Old Trafford, Stamford Bridge. You know, we've already played Liverpool, Man City. It isn't a priority number one game, but he will want to win that, and he will, you know, you would be more than disappointed as a Villa fan if you fail to beat a Liverpool side with whatever team we put out.
It's a really good opportunity for us this season to go and have a real chance of winning something. So if, like you've said, come what may, we stay up, brilliant. No one's going to remember that, really, over the end of this season. But if we can get to a final, maybe win it, that's what we're going to remember seasons by.
That'd be massive. I mean, that will cement Dean Smith's legacy straight away as well.
And it's the thing, if you want your club to be going for it. You know, the reality is we're not going to win the league.
Or
the
else,
FA Cup's
why
difficult.
Are we here?
Why are we here? You're in sport in general because you want to win things. We're not Tottenham.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. We've got this far now. We may as well have a go, mightn't we? We've been, you look at it on paper and think, oh, we've beat Brighton and Wolves. And no, they didn't put full teams out, but we're at this stage of the competition. We've got to go for it.
Yeah.
And if you look at it objectively, actually, under normal circumstances, you'd say, what a crap draw. But actually, it's probably the best draw we could have got.
Yeah, even the lower league teams would be bastards to play at this stage, and they'll put everything into it. So all the other teams, I mean, Man United have been playing a strong team, Leicester.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
So indeed. Anyway, anything else on this fan consultation? I mean, VAR, the club, I mean, behind the scenes have been putting in complaints to the Premier League. They're not happy at all with, I mean, this goes back obviously to the start of the season, some of the decisions. And, you know, you look at Crystal Palace and what happened there, and Mike Riley, who runs the show on this VAR, what's the company called? It's something like PGOL.
PGMOL, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, he's getting paid approaching £250,000, and you just can't believe how you can get paid that much and get something so wrong.
Consistently wrong.
And so the club obviously aren't happy with that. I mean, myself, I've been, I asked the club weeks ago what the situation was in terms of the in-stadia communication to fans, because that is a big, big part of this. Because if you're at home, you kind of got a rough idea what's going on. If you're actually at the game in the stadium, you've paid the money to go there, you've got no idea what's going on. I mean, we saw that even against Liverpool when they weren't contentious decisions. There was two stoppages in that first half where you were just thinking, you know, what's going on? We're just in limbo. Why have they stopped the game for like a minute and a half twice?
It's so poor and it's so easy to remedy as well. I think that's what the frustrating thing is. And like you say, as a fan at the game, you shouldn't have an inferior experience to somebody watching on the TV. And that's what it is at the moment.
Yeah, no, completely. Apart from that, there's movements to upgrade the quality of AVTV. I think they've got some other team in, or some people in, and it's going to be it still remains free. It's not going to be something that you actually pay for to get any extras. But let's see what happens there and see if it actually does improve. Other things like the Nakamba chant, I mean, we've discussed this in detail on the podcast. I know what's actually happened there, but I'll let the club release that, which I think they'll do in a couple of weeks' time or so.
And obviously just the general condition of the area around Villa Park, things like rubbish in the street, street parking, dispersal of fans and traffic after the games, park and ride, things like that. It's not completely all on the club's head, is it? That's
kind of
multi-agency, as they call it. And notoriously, West Midlands trains are crap at the best of times.
And then you've got the usual gripes about Wi-Fi, which I don't think is going to be settled anytime soon. But you've got, I think they're fitting...
4G, isn't it?
Yeah, 4G with...
EE and O2.
Yeah, that's correct. I think Vodafone operate at the moment. Although people I know who have Vodafone would dispute the fact that it operates at the moment.
Although if you're Dan Rogers, you seem to be the only person in the ground who has his own personal satellite to upload videos from the ground.
Dan Rogers
in real time
is literally the only person who can do it. And the only thing that stands in Dan Rogers uploading videos of what's happening in the ground is VAR, because he gets it ready to push out there so fast that when VAR pops up, he's like, oh shit.
He's already pressed the button.
So sometimes he's had to retreat a couple of times. Anyway, I'll keep you posted on what happens at the fan consultation group. I think the next meeting is with Christian Purslow, which may be interesting if Villa haven't put a few more points on the board when we get to it. Let's talk about what's happening on the field finally. We discussed it in the first episode 91. We discussed like the lack of threat, the lack of sustained pressure, which was something that was bugging Dean Smith. And I mean, my I was getting bored of almost saying it, was it's just this lack of cutting edge. I mean, Ben, what's been, I mean, obviously you're a season ticket holder, what's been the downfall from what you've seen with your eyes?
I think like you've touched on in the previous podcasts, I mean, the lack of control in the game is a big thing for us. We don't ever seem to get a rest, which I think is sound like a train.
Someone with a trumpet next door.
Right, we'll try again.
Interruption of trumpet.
Yeah, trumpet over. Trumpet time.
If you hear a trumpet in the background, just embrace it.
Yeah. Controlling games is a big thing for us. We don't seem to manage the game at all in some patches, which I think leads to us coming under sustained pressure. Wesley, whilst I think I've seen enough of him to think that he could be a good player, I just think we're desperate for someone else to come and sort of share the burden with him a little bit, really. He's shown, we've seen it, he was brilliant against Everton. And when we signed him, I thought, you know, we've got somebody here that can really add something.
Yeah, he looked good in pre-season as well.
Yeah. I mean, from what I've seen recently, he especially against Wolves, he seems to like to drop deep, which I don't think is a massive issue for us because we play with like the high wingers. But we really need him to either start scoring more goals, or we desperately need somebody in January to share the burden. like I say.
Be interesting to know if they've got somebody lined up already that maybe they didn't get over the line in the summer.
Or even a few lined up.
If I was betting on how many players come in, looking at the deficiencies, I would say two or three.
Yeah, I'd be looking at two. I don't think, you know, I think for the most part, they actually did a really good job in the summer. They didn't make too many mistakes with what they, considering the overhaul they had to do, they got it pretty right. So I would imagine they'll have known pretty quickly in the season that we're probably a little bit light up top here, and they'll have been looking all over Europe, if not the world.
Yeah, I mean, Dean Smith was putting on a brave face when the transfer window closed, and he was saying, you know, it was basically a press conference saying he's got pretty much everything he needs. And you're thinking, it was so obvious. And here we are now, 12 games later.
Yeah, even with a full, you know, a fully fit Codger and a fully fit Keenan Davis, you're still
I can't, light. Personally, I can't see Codger in the Premier League. He was too unreliable in the Championship, and I know he's had his injury spells, which says the same. I think Davis, I don't think he's ready. Again, I think I'd sort of class him a little bit similar to Wesley, where he probably needs a season in the Championship to really find out what type of player he is, but we can't afford that at the moment. So desperately need another striker.
I think if you told me we would get any money for Codger in January, I'd bite their hands off.
Yeah, and, I agree.
And basically, that gets his wages off the bill, and then you can buy two forwards in and upgrade the position.
In the summer, if we could have part-exchanged him for a Maupai,
yeah,
would have been a good bit of business. But, I mean, my gripes with Codger actually aren't outside of the penalty area. I actually think if you put him in front of goal, he's a pretty clinical finisher, but at this level, you need to have more than that.
Yeah, especially if you're playing the lone striker as well.
Yeah. I think his unpredictability in the Championship was like an asset to him, but now he just hasn't got the quality. It's not his fault necessarily. It's just we've moved on now and we need somebody else. But Chris, like you touching on the games we've got coming up, I think this next month for me will be a real gauge of how good these players are that we've signed, because we're having a little bit of a wobble at the moment. Granted, we've had some really tough fixtures and we've got a few more to come, but I think we're going to really see when we play the likes of Southampton at home, Norwich at home, Watford away. They're the ones really we need to be getting seven as a minimum.
And those games are consecutive over the Christmas period.
Yeah.
And I can see, I mean, Watford, Troy Deeney coming back, and their problem is they haven't turned draws into wins in some circumstances. And I can see them wagging the tail and kind of coming back into it. Southampton have got issues. Norwich have got issues. So it's not as if those three teams are cemented in the bottom three. I think Watford, if they beat Villa, suddenly we've got issues.
Yeah. And even, you know, our next opponent's Newcastle, you know, I think at the start of the season, everybody looked at them as a car crash waiting to happen and an inevitable struggler. But actually, Bruce seems to have found a way to, well, unsurprisingly, kind of grind things out.
I'm of the opinion at the moment that they're sort of fluking it, shall we say.
They've if you look at sort of the stats of the overall league, and Newcastle are pretty much bottom of a hell of a lot of the ones that you'd gauge a good side by in terms of, you know, shots, possession.
But, you know, they beat Manchester. They beat Manchester United and they beat Spurs, and these are games that if we don't win them, we'll make up excuses saying, oh, well, look at their team, it's much better than ours, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, they've just beaten them and got on with it.
But there's a certain amount of catching teams on a bad day, isn't there, as well? And I think...
Well, we've caught a few teams on bad days and played them with them with 10 men as well. And
I agree.
I agree. Taken the advantages.
Definitely of the big games that we've had, especially like you mentioned, Liverpool, Tottenham away, we should have took points.
Arsenal
was the big one. Arsenal as well. I'm still angry about that Arsenal game.
So am I.
But Newcastle, you look at the facts, they've got a £40 million striker who scored one goal. Their strikers aren't scoring. It's defenders. They're getting hardly any possession. It's over the season that is going to catch up with you. It might work over a short period like it is at the moment, but I really think Newcastle will be in and around that bottom three.
Yeah, Joelinton, actually, he's won the second fewest number of headers in the whole league.
Yeah, there you go.
So he doesn't actually hold the ball up. He's had some
And he's actually one of the
second most subbed player in the league as well. Strangely, actually, after Tammy Abraham.
But also...
who is doing the business?
I don't think the Toon Army are fully... They're not behind it, are they? They're not... I mean, they're coming to Villa Park and they haven't sold out their allocation, which never happens.
I think it's probably just about. I think that might be smoke and mirrors, to be honest. But in terms of the, you know, was it something like 8,000 season ticket holders didn't renew at St James's, which is unheard of. I mean, that season ticket there used to be like gold dust that you pass down your family.
There are holes at St James's in certain stands of you know, empty seats, which
and the sort of the feelings towards Ashley haven't waned at all. No, the fans still want him out. They were still unhappy with Bruce being there. But I think as long as Bruce can keep them in the league, I think the fans are generally content with their season's work. But
yeah, I think I'd liken it to when we wanted Lerner out and McLeish was in charge for us. It's a bit of a perfect storm in terms of.
Yeah, it's don't like an inevitability, isn't it, in which way the club is going, or indeed which way the club isn't going.
But there is a difference. I mean, at least Steve Bruce is a Geordie, where obviously Alex McLeish was a relegated Birmingham City manager. So.
Well, Bruce is ex-Sunderland, isn't he, as well? Albeit a little bit, was it a 10-year difference or whenever it was he was manager there?
Yeah, but it's his boyhood team, so that kind of covers up the cracks. So Dean Smith and Bruce have got something in common, at least. They both manage their boyhood teams.
There you go. But only one's had a cabbage thrown at him.
So far.
So far, yeah. Looking at Villa, what's happened 12 games so far? I mean, we mentioned at the top of the show, Spurs haven't actually won an away game at the moment. And this is actually Villa's Achilles heel, even though they've won one game, the Norwich one. They pretty much shot all their load in that one game because they lost the other five games of the six games they've played. So when your away form's that bad, and it is 17th, that is exactly where we are in the league overall. So it's kind of no surprise there.
I mean, I'm pretty glad, to be honest, by the time we get to Christmas, we'll have already been to Spurs, Manchester City, United, Chelsea and Arsenal. Yeah. We'll have all those trips out of the way, which could end up being important in the second half.
So based on that, you would have envisaged, obviously, this is a kind of a new put-together team. So the first half was always going to be tougher anyway. And the fixtures seem to be a bit more, let's say the harder games away were in the first half of the season. So the second half of the season with a team that's familiar with each other, slightly easier gradient of fixtures should see us finish stronger, hopefully.
You'd hope so. I think that my frustration hasn't really been with the away games, although it's not necessarily been the being defeated, but the manner in which we've been defeated. But the bigger frustrations for me have actually been, you know, the failure to get something against Bournemouth, the failure to beat 10-man West Ham, throwing the game away against Burnley. It's those kind of games come May that, you know, the Brighton game kind of masked a few things, but we actually managed, probably for the only time this season, to actually grind a win out.
Yeah. I think the other thing as well is, I haven't got the stats in front of me, but I'd be really surprised if another team played Man City and Liverpool in consecutive game weeks, because that is brutal. We had like a really good back-to-back wins before we played those two games. So it felt as if we built some momentum and then we had them two games, which were free hits, and we should have had something out of the Liverpool game.
Yeah.
But it just felt like if we'd have maybe had Man City away, then a more easier game in between to just to break it up, because like all of a sudden we're on the back of three defeats now, 17th, and everyone's getting a bit edgy. But I think, you know, we'll be absolutely fine. It's concerning where we are.
Was you concerned by the lack of effort against Wolves, though?
That was, Dean Smith said it all, didn't he? He said that the first half was really, really poor. You can forgive poor performances, I think, because it happens. But it just seemed that there was a lack of effort. We were getting bullied. And really, we should have been taking the game to them. And I know that some fans will say, oh, it's Wolves. It's not really a proper derby. It's still a local derby against a good team that I feel as if we didn't really show ourselves in the best light at all.
We lost to a better team who wanted it more. You don't mind losing to a better team. You know, you go to Man City and you get turned over 3-0. You go, well, do you know what? There's going to be better teams who are going to go there and get absolutely torn to shreds.
Because the only way to beat them would be to, basically in terms of effort, outdo them. Because we had to nullify their quality, and their first goal just summed it up.
It was like basic stuff, wasn't it?
It was dreadful.
Really, we were lucky to go in 1-0 down, I would say.
Which is kind of what Smith said, didn't he, after the game? That the best part about the first half was only been a goal down. I just think that I said it in the previous pod, that a kind of a performance like that had maybe been coming. You know, we'd been playing well but losing. We'd been getting the odd win and playing reasonably well. But I just thought at some point you're going to have a mare, and we're not set up to play badly and win.
No. I'd just question, really, on that first goal. You know, what everybody knows, Neves, pretty much all his goals are from outside the box, aren't they?
Yeah.
So surely somebody should have been saying, I don't know whether it's Mings or anybody, get someone on the edge of the box. We had every single person in the box. So even if we'd cleared the first shot, it's coming straight back in again. And I don't think we're the only team in the league that do it, but especially from set pieces close to the goal corners, we bring every single player back. So it's like we don't have anybody to try and, you know, win a flick on to get us up the pitch.
It's the eternal frustration of that tactic, which I can't work it out. I asked Steve Bruce to his face why he did it. In a nutshell, his answer was it's the trend nowadays. And he's just thinking, well, break this fucking trend.
Why be on trend when you can be ahead of the... You know, before Pep came to the Premier League, everyone was playing a different style of football. Now everybody wants to play possession-based football. We can be ahead of the curve.
I presume it must be that the statisticians have looked at it and said, if you bring everybody back, this is the amount of goals you're going to concede. If you leave one person up, you're going to let more in. That's the only
reason
I can think of.
Which is fine when you've got Mings and Engels, who've blocked more shots than anybody in the league combined. They've won more headers, I think, combined as well. But if someone's rolling the ball to the edge of the penalty area, that's not competing at set play, is it? That's naive, and it's just stupid.
I wonder if we had a real speed merchant, whether they would leave them on the halfway line as an out ball. Because, I mean, if you look back to the classic game against Everton at Goodison, the 3-2 where it...
And we had Ashley Young.
Lescott thought he'd rescued the point, and then that comes out, correct me if I'm wrong, from a corner. I think it's Larson heads it out. I think it's Gabby that flicks it on, because we kept men up. Yeah. And then obviously Ashley Young does his thing. But there's no way you score a goal like that.
The same season, of course, we went to the Emirates, didn't we? And I think Arsenal would have had a set piece or a corner. One launch from back to front, Gabby's in behind. And it's having that real breakneck speed that, regardless of being a threat in terms of scoring goals, it just gets you physically up the field.
Yeah.
It turns the opposition around. Like someone like Van Dijk, if you play with your back to goal against him, he's going to dominate anyone in Europe. But if you've got someone who can run in behind him, all of a sudden it's giving him something different to think about. And no defender likes facing their own goal.
And that is the thing. It's giving them something to think about. Because if they see you all hugged in your six-yard box, they're like, right, they're not thinking about how they're going to defend this. Yeah. They can just concentrate fully on attacking
Which is why it sometimes frustrates me with the likes of Alghazi and Trezeguet, who actually, they look at their best when they're a little bit more selfish and just get your head down and run. Because at least if you get to the byline, it's like you can either whip it in and deliver. You might get a corner. You might get a foul. But at least you're actually taking the game to the opposition.
Yeah. It's surprising because we've sat here and you pair have said in previous podcasts, like Dean Smith is an attacking manager. He will go forward. So it's really odd that when we are defending, he doesn't leave somebody up the pitch to try and make something happen.
And how far we retreat as well. You know, it's not like we're defending halfway in our own half with a high line. We are like, we're right back on our 18-yard line. It's like backs to the walls for...
Because I can't remember when this first came in. I know Di Matteo did this, then Bruce carried it on, and I can't remember.
I mean, it wouldn't have been Remy Gard, would it? I mean, he'd have just put 11 men across the goal line. And
I think it's like a sign of desperation, really, that we'll get everybody back and we just want to get ahead on it. It's like defending with like a minute to go when there's a corner and you think, right, we've just got to see this out. We've just got to hold on to this, and you bring everyone back.
Because back in the day, when you're playing school football, the rule of thumb was if they're leaving one up the field, you leave two back.
Yeah.
So if you'd left five up, they should leave six up. So that kind of nullifies their attacking.
Perhaps we should try that then.
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I saw that we've conceded the most chances in the season so far. I mean, that's why Mings's blocking stats and tackling stats are well up there. So that shows you that our defence, I think our defence is battle tested and it's pretty good and it's better than it's been for a while. So
I think our back four is definitely where it needs to be. I think it's your collective defensive unit, isn't it? It's what your Grealish, McGinn, Nakambra, and especially the two wide guys, you know, it's your Trezeguet, Alghazi, those kind of guys. It's what they bring to the overall defensive.
I mean, Heaton, you can tick that box. It's just when you look at the other end, and in terms of Premier League chances, I mean, number one, Manchester City, 199. This is over the 12 games. Then Chelsea, and it's a big difference. It's a drop to 157. Liverpool, with their methodical approach, 155. And Villa are top 10. They're ninth, joint with Spurs, 118, which is obviously, they're creating the ninth, or joint eight most chances. But as we've discussed, there doesn't seem to be that threat. There doesn't seem to be that sustained pressure. So a lot of these chances are kind of in isolation, and some of them are like, you know, 50-50, nothing, half chances. And this is something that needs looking at, because we can create chances, as the stat says here, but it's like the quality of it. And sometimes it's only through sustained pressure and, you know, the defense's kind of mental breakdown that, you know, chances come. If you keep them under the cosh, sometimes they break. I mean, that's why we break eventually, because you're playing somebody like Liverpool are just coming. As Klopp said, if you go 1-0 up against us, you're going to get one or two more chances. You better take them because we're coming for you.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting stat, because we've spoke about Wesley before and needing another striker, but I don't know what you pair think. It's one of them. How many sitters has Wesley missed this season? Not many.
Yeah.
So
even half chances, really. Yeah, I can only think of one. Was it like a header against West Ham when he had a close range header? But other than that, you don't. I think if anything, Abraham the previous season scored a lot of goals, but he was actually a lot more wasteful because he was making a lot more chances.
Yeah. That's an interesting comparison, because at the end of the season, I remember after we won at Wembley, just being in the Box Park, and some Villa fans posing the question to me saying, 25 million for Abraham, would you do the deal? And I was saying, well, and they were saying, I wouldn't. And that was, I think, based on that premise that he's just too wasteful. Yeah. But my argument was, well, he gets around the pitch, but he's getting around the pitch with purpose. He's getting down the channels, he's getting wide, but it's with the intent to turn around and go for goal. Now, Wesley is quite happy when he plays the ball, or if he picks the ball up at the halfway line, he'll pass it down the line or whatever, and then he won't breakneck forward to get in front of the the winger or level with him. He doesn't get into the box. He's just, he kind of hangs back. He's playing like a midfielder.
It's not his game, is it? Yeah. I think Abraham's a lot more, I'm going to get in the 6-yard box. Yeah. I'm getting on the end of everything here. He's got that really
poachy,
selfish kind of, I am going to be the main guy who's scoring 25, 30 goals a season here.
I think that's the biggest difference, I think, between Tammy and Wes, is the work rate off the ball. Yeah. You didn't realise when you watch Tammy how much he closed defenders down.
Yeah.
And as we've just said, I don't think that's Wesley's game. And maybe that's why fans have got a little bit frustrated, because we used to see an Abraham and he's off the back of 20 goals. Granted, it was in the Championship. But I think maybe as well, David, like you say, you see Tammy banging him in for Chelsea, getting in the England team. And now we've got Wes, who's doing okay, but
getting in the
more.
Brazilian team.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, he's Brazilian international, so he's got to be worth 40 million now at least, hasn't he? So, yeah.
I think that's what we said on the bootleg show that patrons.
How far have Brazil fallen?
That was pretty much the premise of our discussion.
And that's not out of disrespect to Wesley, but you look at some of the greats that have come through the Brazil teams of the years. You know, your Ronaldo, Ronaldinho, Romario, etc. And these are, you're talking about global icons.
Because I'm sitting here comfortable with the fact that Grealish isn't in the England team, because I think probably needs to do a little bit more and against better opposition, because his standout game was against 10 men Brighton. So I'm cool with that. I'm not in hysteria on social media, you know, saying, oh, he should be in that, you know, what's Southgate doing? I can reason with that. But when you've got Wesley breaking into the Brazilian team, which historically is one of the teams, then you think, yeah, as Rogers says, Grealish captain of an all-star 11, yeah, all-star world 11, if Wesley's the Brazilian striker or national team striker.
I mean, I'm hoping from his point of view, it gives him a real sense of confidence. He can kind of feel like, oh, you know, I am the main man here, and start playing like a guy who's leading the line.
We will. We've mentioned Newcastle quickly there, but we'll discuss that more in the anti-preview and obviously our history with them and any other random thoughts that come into our heads. I think we'll close it off here, and we'll look forward actually to coming back to the studio to do a couple more shows. Thank you very much, Ben, for joining us.
No worries.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks to Chris as well
for
joining us. Not you, the one from Norway. One from Norway, one from Sutton Coldfield, is that right?
Yep.
And please do spread the word if you have a good Villa pal. do tell them if everybody gets one more like-minded soul into the business of listening to the My Old Men Said podcast, we'll double our listenership. Please do follow on Spotify, Apple, or whatever podcast app you listen to. Most of all, please do become a My Old Men Said patron to support the show. And also, don't forget about the beer sponsors, as we mentioned earlier on in this show, who will give you 10 Wunderbar beers from around the world, IPAs, stouts. So actually, you can choose. You can go for all light beers or a mixture of craft IPAs and stouts and porters, etc. Check out www.beer52.com/moms and you'll get the full details there and how to get it. All you have to do is pay $4.95 postage and they send you, the next day, we'll send you a box of beers for free.
Just in time for Christmas.
And it's a craft beer club and you can cancel any time if you don't want to continue the deal. But it's tempting to actually stay on because taste of some of those beers. And you also get to explore the world of beers, like literally the world. I think it's Korea at the moment, amongst others. Right, on that note, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Pressed the wrong button, but it's now time for the Scott Hogan Touch Count Challenge. Three-way. I wish I had a pen. Oh, hold on a minute. Bud's got a pen. I need to jot down these tallies.
Do you need a pad, Dave, as well?
Yeah, go on. Have you got a pad?
I do.
I'm going to rearrange my chair so that I can eyeball Stokes.
Max has got a cold.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Disclosure, Max has got a cold.
Sorry, everyone.
He's not really. That's not that he hasn't got a cold, is it? He's not sorry.
He's also been doing Tinder all the way through this podcast.
Not about that.
He's been swiping.
Anyway, so you're the champion. Are you putting up your title?
Yeah, go on.
It's not really a risk. I mean, this is more of like a first round FA Cup game, isn't it? I'm fielding the kids, fielding Scott Hogan's kids.
There's a prospect.
I need to...
That's going
to
get me in trouble, isn't it?
There are mirrors behind me, is there? So you can see what I've got jotted down. We've actually been a bit slack on our Scott Hogan history because, you know, Nathan Jones, the Stoke manager that got sacked?
Oh, yes.
Yep.
Apparently, they had a flare-up before the Swansea game, which he actually scored in.
Scott, can you get a touch, please?
He scored the winner, didn't he?
Yeah, he came off the bench. Apparently, he'd been frozen out for a few games.
Been frozen.
And the story goes, the manager, well, ex-manager now, called him for a conversation because he heard that, well, basically one of the players had told the manager what Scott had said about him. So he pulled him in and Hogan said there was, let's say the manager sweared. Because I think he was being interviewed on TV, so he obviously couldn't swear. And he said he banged his hand on the table as well. And then they had a conversation, and he said, get your kit, you're coming to the Liberty. I think it was at Liberty Stadium. So he basically gave him a bollock and then put him in. Then he came off the bench, and apparently that was the kick up the backside. But I was trying to research, is he injured? Because he wasn't selected for, well, funny enough, he's not in the squad. Stoke win all of a sudden. They beat Barnsley 4-2.
Aston Villa haven't exercised a recall option, have they?
They beat Barnsley 4-2 and swapped places. So Barnsley are now bottom of the championship and Stoke have moved up. Whoa. So we have no Scott Hogan to count because he managed to fail to get any minutes. Have you been looking at my screen, cheating?
I've been eyeballing Dan
for the last 5 minutes.
We've got a camera up there. We've got two cameras.
We've got VAR in the studio.
We've got double VAR cameras. We can get Chris thrown out.
We'll get it wrong.
You don't want to be thrown out onto these streets, I tell you.
Rough as arse.
Right. Well, let's not hang around in the championship. Let's go back to the Molyneux.
Oh, God.
So, as I alluded to earlier on, it was like 1982 all over again as Nyland rushed on to try to save Villa's soul, coming on in the 7th minute. Not exactly Spinks. Spinks, I think, was the 6th minute, if
more Spunks.
if I'm not wrong. How many touches did Mr. Nylon get in his 83 minutes at Molineux?
Dan's first.
Dan can choose to go first, or you could choose somebody else. It's up to you. You are the master. So you get to choose if you want to go first or one of these pretenders.
Let's hear what Bud's going to contribute to the conversation.
I'm going to put the marker down. 20.
20 from the Bud.
Yeah.
Who's next, Mr. Dan? You choose.
Go for it, Mr. Stokes.
I don't know. I don't think you've ever done a goalkeeper, have you? So it's quite...
I think we did one a couple of weeks ago, I think.
Okay, I'm going to go a little bit higher.
We did Heaton, actually, last week.
31.
36. 36. Right, into the second round.
28.
28 from Mr. Bud. Max Stokes.
27.
Ooh. 33.
He gets it. 33. What? Bang on. That's why he's the champion.
Absolutely blank.
Rigged.
That's why he is the champion.
Towards Ireland.
You know, like in the mid 90s when Man United were just winning titles. And I'm just nonchalantly raising cups now.
He's just bored. He's apathetic about it now. Just thinking, I don't even want to play anymore. This is boring.
I'm Jordi Cruyff. I'm not even the good Cruyff, and I'm raising titles.
Right.
Just like Man United, when it all goes horribly wrong, we'll all be laughing.
Let's stay at Molineux for this the second game. I thought about the best of three, but because there's three of us, should we say the first to two? Yeah.
Isn't that basically the best of three anyway?
Yeah, but if he gets one and you get one and you get one.
Oh, yeah, true.
So, yeah, first to two. Right, let's stay at Molineux. Villa's highest touch achiever?
Touch counter?
Touch counter was Mr. Gilbert. That yellow card didn't even put him off. How many touches did he have? And he played the whole game, 90 minutes.
75.
75 from Dan.
66.
66 from Chris.
80.
Max with an 80. Over to the Rogers.
85.
85 from the Rogers.
What did I say before?
66.
78.
78. Chris can see the numbers, so he's got to, I'm doing him a favour here.
86.
86 from Max Stokes. Right, we're going to a third and final round.
Oh.
Actually, sorry, I scrapped that. We're not going into a third and final round because Dan Rogers got it on 85. Sorry, I thought it was 88, but it was actually 85 when I double-checked.
Dan has Optostats on his laptop.
Listen.
You should look. See the look on Max Stokes' face. It's one of absolute disgust.
I'm
and
shocked. I don't know how he did.
He's actually nailed these within two rounds. We never went to a third round.
Oh. Don't waste any time.
Because he does his research.
So I've come prepared. Villa Underground Christmas jumpers will be available soon. With my face on it, holding a
trophy. Right, okay, we'll give you one plug for winning.
You earned it.
Close the door on the way out, Max.
World champion, still, even on a three-way, he managed to retain his title. We don't know how he does it. Dan Rogers, congratulations.
Thank you, everybody. Up to stats now.
Right, on that note, it's time to get out of here. Thank you very much for listening as per usual.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.